I'm Larry Collins. I teach geology at San Fernando Valley State College during the year when I'm not up here. If you have any questions about rocks or minerals as you walk around, well, don't hesitate to bring anything to me, and I'll try to answer them for you. We'll have a mine hike on Wednesday at 11 o'clock and go up and see the mine, get the whole history there sometime if you want to come along. What I'm going to talk about today is why are there mountains? And if you examine the present erosion of streams and rivers, of the ocean waves beating on the shore, of glaciers, there's sufficient geologic time so that all the mountains that now exist should have been eroded down into the sea at least 45 times. Yet we have mountains. And I want to explore with you why we have them, even in spite of this. Basically, it's because the Earth is extremely unstable. People are used to thinking, walk around the solid rocks around here, they ought to be fairly stable. But in terms of geologic time, these rocks are very unstable and things are moving around rather rapidly. Let me explore two possibilities with you to explain why we have mountains, at least several kinds of mountains. And tonight I'm going to explore with you volcanoes, which is another type of mountain that's formed. One of the reasons that we have mountains is that the land surface, if this is the continent and this is the ocean here, the streams and glaciers and the waves are beating on these rocks, eroding them, dumping them out here into the ocean. And the material that's dumped out here in the deltas on the ocean floor is primarily sedimentary rocks, sediments. And this material has a density of around, let's say, about 2.8 in comparison to water. Worldwide, we find that beneath the continents and beneath the oceans, there seems to be a basalt layer. And this basalt layer, it extends underneath the continent, has a density of about 3.0. So these sediments that are being dumped in here on top of the basalt layer, as more and more sediments come in, it pushes down on the basalt layer and causes it to be depressed. And so as fast as you dump material in, this depresses the basalt layer so that it goes down below and it's pushed down into the crust of the earth, so that the sea out here never quite fills up. And you keep pouring more material in, and you always have a shallow water deposit out here. And you can find in these sediments mud cracks where they've been exposed to air and the mud has dried. You can find raindrop prints in them. You can find ripple marks. You can find shallow water fossils. You can find all kinds of features that indicate that the sediments are dumped into a shallow sea. Now, through geologic time, and we're talking perhaps in terms of 50 million years, or maybe even longer, this shallow sea will bow down the basalt layer as much as 50 to 80,000 feet. And you'll have 50 to 80,000 feet of shallow water deposit. As fast as you dump material in, it subsides, and you've got room to dump more material in over the top of it, and you just keep pouring it in, and it never quite fills up because it constantly is bowed down. So now we've got material, sediments, sand, mud, lime, low-density material, being emptied into here and pushing and depressing the crust and bowing this layer down, which has a density of 3.0. You can think of this as a bit like a cork, which you put on the water and you put weight on the cork and more, and then the cork is pushed down into a denser material. In the initial state of dumping this material in, the sediments are cold, they get compacted, they get welded to the basalt crust, and they're stuck there. And in a sense, then, you're pulling a a chunk of ice which floats with the lower density in water below the surface and forcing it down, eventually get down to great enough depth where the radioactive elements are decaying, giving off energy, and the heat builds up. And rocks are exceedingly poor conductors of heat. The net result is the heat will build up to the point down here where the rocks will actually melt. When this occurs, then your cork or your ice cube becomes unstuck, and there's nothing to hold it down there. And you've got this low density material down here at depth, which are like a cork which wants to float up. It wants to come up. And once you melt it so it no longer is welded down there, it starts to rise. And when it does rise, then in order for this to get back through this narrow opening, it crumples and folds and breaks and faults and comes up as a mountain range. And it will float up until it reaches equilibrium, until it reaches a balance. You know that ice cubes are at equilibrium when 9/10 of the ice cube is below the water and 1/10 is above, because the density of ice is about 9/10. In other words, instead of 2.8, ice has a density of 0.9 compared to water. Well, here you have low density material 2.8 floating in a density material of 3.0. And so you may have 80,000 feet of sediments here melted. And once it starts to come up, then it will float up to form folded mountain ranges, and it will rise until it reaches equilibrium. Okay, you get the picture? The heat is due to the radioactive elements at great depth, which are constantly decaying, giving off energy.
That's there all the time.
It's in the rocks all the time. But once it gets buried down here, the heat doesn't escape very readily, and it builds up. And this seems, yes?
You talked about how it goes down. Is that when the sediment
comes in? It's the sediment just keeps coming in over the top of it and piling up, and the weight of it.
The weight of it, yeah. That's
right. Now, this may not be entirely the whole story as to why this bows down. I'm going to get to the other story. It's a problem of continental drift.
If that was something other than a default layer, is there something that could be there that it wouldn't bow down?
If it were extremely dense material, then it might support the column anyway, you see, but its density is very close to what it is. Okay. So when you see mountain ranges like the Sierra Nevada or the Himalayas or any of the mountain ranges, the higher the mountain range, the deeper the roots. Okay. So that what has occurred in the Appalachian Mountain system is that these things have been, well, let me back up. Suppose we build up the Himalayas here, and we've got them 30,000 feet above the sea level. Supposing you erode off some of the mountain ranges, what's going to happen? Supposing you have an ice cube and you cut off the top of it, what's going to happen? It's going to bob up to reach equilibrium. So the Earth's crust is constantly trying to adjust to the erosion forces in the mountains, and periodically you hear about an earthquake over in the Himalayas. Mount Everest goes up 4 feet. Somebody has to go down and reclimb it now because it's 4 feet higher. Okay, but it's a constant adjustment of the crust to maintain a balance between the forces of density and the rock. In the Appalachian Mountain system, these are an old mountain system, in which it's bobbed up through geologic time until you're just about down to the roots of the mountain. And this is a rather stable region now, and there's very few earthquakes because you've just about bobbed up to where you've removed all the overburden. And in the past, the Appalachians used to be a very high mountain range, 30,000 feet high, like Mount Everest. But now we've eroded off enough times, and it's come up to bring the roots up, and now it's a fairly stable region. Whereas the Rocky Mountain system and the Sierra Nevadas are young mountains, and they still have extensive roots, and they're periodically adjusting to the erosion strain on the top of it, and they periodically bob up.
What is the thickness of that basalt?
It varies, at least according to our seismic record, it may be as much as 20, 30 kilometers thick.
30 kilometers?
Yeah, or thicker.
What would be a measurement of rise per year or a month or for 100 years.
All right. So in the San Bernardino Range, which is just near where I live, they have a rail line that goes through Cajon Pass. The Coast and Geodetic Survey are keeping records on the rail line. They have benchmarks. They go through every 10 years and measure these. And this mountain range is going up something like about 19 inches every 100 years. If you translate this now into a million years, which is very short in terms of geologic time, that mountain range is going up to about 1,000 feet or more in a million years. And so we're building a mountain there, you see, in terms of geologic time. Yes, sir.
Could we extend that theory at all to explain why there are more active Earth features?
Yes. Now, this just leads me right into the next topic. And let's take a look at that. If this is North America continent and South America down here, Great Lakes in here if you have a good imagination. Atlantic Ocean has what we call the Mid-Atlantic Ridge coming down over here, and the Pacific Ocean has its Pacific Ridge. Iceland happens to be right on the ridge. Canary Islands down here is on it. The Mid-Atlantic Ridge is a volcanic range, which for the most part is below the surface of the ocean. But volcanoes have erupted on it enough times, at least at Iceland and Canary Islands, where they've emerged at the surface and we see them as part of this ridge. If we look at a cross-sectional view of the ocean floor, this Mid-Atlantic Ridge is a double chain. In places it pokes up and we see it as an island and as a volcanic island. It's an enormous range extending all the way through the Atlantic. It goes, connects with other ridges that go around the middle of most of the other oceans, with a deep valley in here, and volcanoes erupt on this periodically. We find, however, that in terms of the Earth's crust on the average is about 20 miles thick. It varies from place to place depending upon where you have these mountain ranges, and there it's a little bit deeper where the roots go down. Below the crust, and I've exaggerated the crust here considerably. Actually, if I drew the crust on the surface, I couldn't draw it thin enough on the scale that I made. Below the crust, we have a zone in here we call the mantle. And below that, we have an area which we call the core. The transition between the crust and the mantle is called the Mohorovicic discontinuity. Now that's such a mouthful that most Americans call it the MOHO. We've all heard of the MOHO. We want to drill down and find out what the MOHO consists of.
M-O-H-O?
M-O-H-O. Now, the reason the geologists want to drill down there, they want to find out whether the mantle consists of something entirely different that we've never seen before, or whether it is basalt, which at that pressure causes the basalt to recrystallize to form something a little bit denser than what it used to be. Now, using exert enough pressure in rocks, it will recrystallize and form new minerals, which are denser packed. And it may represent just that, but we're not sure. It might represent a sulfide mixture or something entirely different. But there appears, and the geologic evidence now supports this in many respects, that the mantle has convection currents in it. When you heat water in a pan, as the heat is absorbed in the bottom of the pan by a flame here, the water with the increased energy begins to expand, and as it increases in volume, it gets lower density, and the lower density material then tends to rise, and the colder water, which is denser, tends to come down. So you have a convection current that stirs up the water. Well, there appears to be, in the core, seems to be liquid. It seems to be fairly hot down here because of the radioactive elements. And so you get density currents occurring in the mantle where lower density material is rising and colder denser material is coming down and taking its place. So this current appears to be rising along the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. This is where things are coming up. And as it comes up, splits into two parts and goes over like this. This is dividing the continent and shoving them apart, you see. So that the continental crust is like a raft on the surface which is being slowly moved apart, drifting the continents away. And this is the so-called continental drift. If you erupt the lava here and it spills out and runs down the slope, in the lava are crystals of magnetite, which are natural magnets. As these magnets crystallize in the lava, they align their magnetic fields parallel to the present Earth's magnetic field. And so all these little crystals point toward the North Pole. Alright? We know through geologic time that the magnetic poles of the Earth occasionally reverse. And what is now the North geographic magnetic pole will become the South magnetic pole. And it flips back and forth. We find it is in the present position of the lava along the mid-Atlantic ridge over here. All the lava here points to the north like this, but as you move out from here, you get lava flows which all point to the south. And then if you go a little bit further, you get a little thin strip here that points to the north, and you get an equivalent thin strip on the other side that points to the north. You get mirror images on both sides of the mid-Atlantic ridge of how these things point. Apparently the stuff has erupted, and as more material occurs, it rafts apart and carries the record progressively out away from this. And so you get mirror images of both sides. We also find fossil records. We've now had some oceanographic ships out drilling across the ocean floor, and we find that there are younger sediments near the Atlantic Ridge, and as you get progressively away from it, you find older and older sediments. That is, as you go down in depth, and these stuff have been rafted away. The rate of movement here is something like, on the average, about a centimeter for every 100 years. It's not drifting very fast, but it's a movement which is measurable. Can I borrow your paper there a moment? But you're going to have to think of the crust and the continents as not being solid hunks of rock like you're used to thinking of it. If I could draw a larger circle I could draw on here, on the board, that chalk streak is too thick. The crust is a thin veneer on the surface. And if you represent this piece of paper as a thin veneer of sediments on the surface, if I start applying any kind of pressure on it, I'm going to buckle it. Okay? So any kind of small movement is going to buckle that thin veneer of sediments. And this is what folds up the sediments to form mountains and the ranges that we see. And you're not used to thinking of sediments as being a thin veneer. And this is what I want to bring across to you. So, in the Atlantic Ocean, the Atlantic Ridge, we have a convection cell, apparently, which is welling up, spreading the continents apart. And this probably began about in the Jurassic time, about 350 million years ago. Before that, the continents were close together, and you can see on a global map how South America almost fits right into Africa, how North America fits right into the continent. How about that? There's a map right there. On that picture, you can just see how these things slide right into position. And they actually find that certain rocks in South America with a certain structure and type will match up with rocks right over here in Africa. And their structural trend is exactly parallel, and you can just see how they've been pulled apart. 15 years ago, geologists were completely pooh-poohing this idea that something was all completely crazy. We're finding so many different kinds of things that correlate and that convince us that this is actually the case. On the Pacific Ocean side, over here, we also have a Pacific Ridge. But the ridge is split by rift zones, that is, its offset. And then here's your ridge, which offsets like this. And along each of these zones, then, it's moving apart. And these are tear zones where these things occur. The Hawaiian Islands happen to be along one of these tear zones, where the lava happens to be coming up this one. And progressively, as you go eastward toward Japan from the Hawaiian Islands, you get progressively to older and older volcanoes, and the present Mauna Loa is the young one that's just coming up along the Terrazone. So that we've got material which is moving toward California over here. This is coming this way, and the continent's caught between here. Okay. So what happens along the Pacific side here is that as the stuff wells up on the surface, I'll draw a cross-sectional view here of the rising convection current, and let's say right here is the continent. As this comes this way, the continental material, the sediments, is pushed down underneath the continent. This then causes the coastal material to be dragged down, and this creates the large trenches. And you've heard about the very deep trenches around Japan, where I think it's the deepest part of the ocean. These are the places where the continental crust is being pushed down and dragged down. This creates the basins to which the sediments then dump in, and may be in part the cause of the deep trenches that are the deep 50 to 80,000 feet of sediments that I was talking about. It's in part the crust that's going down that creates this, in part the weight that comes in. This may come from the question about earlier in the year where people were quite concerned about a big earthquake in California that's supposed to drop into the ocean. Is this what you're wondering about? With all this going down like this, it's shoving California up, and it's physically impossible for California to fall in. And all the present geologic evidence is that the California coastline is rising, and you can see raised beaches, and I'll show you pictures of these, of the fact that it's going up. However, okay. Will says we're taking earth control pills too to take care of them. Now, because of the sediments that are dumping off the coast here, and they're being dragged down by this crustal movement going down like this, you're taking low density material, in part saturated with water, because they're mixed with water, dragging them down here at great depths. Consequently, as they get down here at great depths, they get quite hot, and the volatile material then begins to convert into steam, and the stuff tries to get up and out. And so when it comes up along here, this is where your volcanoes are generated. The whole Andes mountain range, all along California, Oregon, Washington, the Mount Rainier, Mount Hood, the whole range, all the way up around Alaska, all the way up around, in other words, the whole Pacific ring, called the Ring of Fire. This is the region where this stuff is going up and going under the continent, dragging this low-density sediment and the water under there. It gets hot and it comes up, and this is where all your volcanoes are generated. So this is also the active earthquake belt. This is where the crustal movements occur, the constant adjustment by the earth crust to the strains of this convection current. And it's a good thing we do have earthquakes. We have them in the neighborhood of about 10,000 a year, maybe even more. Of these 10,000, probably four are dangerous. But it's a constant adjustment to the strain. If it weren't for these adjustments, the strain would build up until it became very violent, and then there would be a major slip, and then we would have a very violent reaction of the vibrations on the crust. These are women, but it's in the geologic past. This used to be the shoreline of the continent, and there was a shallow sea there which built up 50 to 80,000 feet of sediment. And then this got out of equilibrium, and now it's bobbed up to form the Rocky Mountains. If I could live another 50 to 100 million years, I would predict the next mountain range would be off the Gulf of Mexico, where the Mississippi River is dumping off. It's over 40,000 feet of shallow water deposits down there now. So it would just be a matter of time.
Any relationship to this?
Yes. Steam geysers result from probably at depth some hot lava which is emitting heat and is heating up the groundwater. And the groundwater builds up the steam and then comes up.
At what depth are the rocks molten, or the pressure?
in some places the pressure is sufficient to keep them molten, but if the temperature gets up sufficient to, I guess you'd have to go down about 5 to 8 miles down for this to occur.
How far?
About 5 to 8 miles down.
Right.
Temperature gets up around 700 degrees centigrade, they'll begin to melt. But right. Before that, they will behave very plastically, like chocolate syrup running down the sundae. The temperature gets sufficient that they become mobile and fluid. And then
that's the condition of the inside of Earth. Huh?
That's right.
And what causes this, what's the theory of what causes the radioactivity in the first place?
Well, certain elements have a certain number in the nucleus of an element. There's a certain combination of protons and neutrons in here. Now, if I have two isotopes, now I'll explain what an isotope is, of iron, for example. As long as both molecules have the same number of protons, they're still iron. But not all molecules of iron have the same number of neutrons. And that, if you have more neutrons in here, it makes the nucleus a little bit unstable. And some neutrons, or some atoms of iron have so many neutrons in there that they become unstable and they spontaneously change and give off energy to get rid of some of this instability, and this is a radioactive decay process.
And so decay. This,
yeah, it's called decay. It changes into another element which is a little bit more stable by this process. And nature doesn't always make all elements exactly the same. You know, they're unstable, and this is a radioactive adjustment that they make.
What's the specific weight of the rock, for instance, around here?
Around here? Most of the rocks along Martin Ridge and around here are metamorphic rocks that used to be sediments, and they've been buried to great depth to form, got down there at high enough temperatures and pressures that they were changed into a more stable form. And I'll talk about this on the mine hunt when we go. There are other rocks around here which are igneous, which were once molten, which have intruded into these and come up in a liquid form.
Are the rocks, solid rocks, heavier, or are they about 2.8
also? Most of these metamorphic rocks are around 2.8. The granites, that is when you melt sediments, you make granite, which is essentially the same stuff. But the basalt is a much denser material. It has different elements in it. Okay? More iron, more calcium. I'm going to stop here and show you slides. I could probably go on for an hour, chalked off from this.